Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you again for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Once again, we're joined by Randy Grigg, president of Elite Auctions. Randy has a Master's of Science degree from University of Riverside. He gradually gathered a fleet of rentals that he still has most of those today, and also entered the auction business. Randy, welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Bruce.
And Mike, his son, owns his own auction company, is well known in the auction world, and is an award-winning caller. And as a matter of fact, Mike, I really enjoy your style. And so welcome back to our show.
Thanks, Bruce.
Randy, I guess we'll start with you in the auction because tell me how that even came up. You're buying and selling some houses and you're renting most of them. When did the inspiration come about to say, maybe we could do this?
Well, it really came about because I had sort of finished with my career and I also finished with buying houses for long-term investment. And you know, there comes a time when you have enough houses and you get burned out with everything, you know, if you do it long enough, you know. Anyway, I wanted to change paths and decided I'd go out and flip some houses. So I talked to you and Mike can too, and some of the people that are successful in doing that. And now, well, this doesn't sound that hard. And started doing it and didn't buy right to start. You know, you didn't buy cheap enough, and expenses, the fix-ups were more than what I thought. It took longer to sell and fell out of escrow more times than I can even imagine and all that stuff, which, you know. So finally ended up doing it, but I didn't like the selling side of the thing. So because of the properties that fell out of escrow and just that whole escrow period of, you know, contingent contract, you know, 21-day look, take a look and, you know, and check everything out and make sure everything's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So then we said, you know, there's got to be a better way. So we started slow but sure doing the rehabs and then using the auction method to sell the rehab property. And like anything, it took a while to figure that out. And finally, we sort of figured it out, and it worked for us. So that's what we like. It's a non-contingent contract, and they put up, well, at one time in Arcadia, we had $40,000. In order to bid, you had to have $40,000 just to be a bidder there. And so they had a lot of money at stake.
Mm-hmm.
So they got very creative when they got turned down from the banker. They were going to lose their $40,000.
Yeah, that can spur creativity, can't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So our, you know, our success rate, at least with the closing escrows, was very, very good. We like that part of it a lot.
Mike, when did you first become involved in the auction business?
You know, about the same time.
What year was that?
This is going back about 9 years ago now. So I guess it'd be 2002.
Okay, so, you know, what's interesting, and, you know, the auction business has always intrigued me. As you know, we certainly gave it a shot, and I'm pretty familiar with auctions, and we still managed to blow it in the middle of a boom. So it's not an easy profession. So I really have respect for anybody that can pull an auction off, because it's not easy. But in that cycle, what's interesting is most people wouldn't have even thought about an auction, just because it was pretty easy to sell, and it got increasingly easy to sell from 02 to 06. Normal selling wasn't hard, and yet every time you auctioned a property off, I would imagine the seller had a pretty good smile on their face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, auctions actually, believe it or not, work better when the market is hot, because the bidders are ferocious and they don't want to lose, and the money's there to bid, and many times the price goes much higher than what a traditional sale might bring.
What's so good about being around for a long time, you know, you've watched this model. In the future, we plan to be doing building, and you know, you're going to go back to a California at some point that has so many people interested in, you know, the little six-house track, there'll be lottery numbers or something. Or you can just put them all eyeball to eyeball on the lawn and let them tell you what it's worth.
Yeah.
And that'd probably be a lot more exciting number.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting because that will occur again, but you already have all those tools in the bag, and so that's pretty neat. You attended an auction school. What was that like? Because from the outside looking in, you think, okay, I would never be able to talk like that.
You know, I really enjoy being in front of people and speaking. So that's about, I'm going to say that's about 75% of being a successful auctioneer is being comfortable in front of a big group of people and having a good personality and be able to joke around with them. I use humor a lot. I think people always like to laugh, but that's just my thought. That seems to have worked pretty well so far. But the auction school, it's intense. They get you up on the first day and say, well, here's the basic chant, here's the key words you need to remember, and get up there and do it. And I mean, it's about a week long course of 8 to 9 hour grueling days where you're on the microphone, you know, 75% of the time, because there's a very small class. So,
is there a difference in the cadence when you're auctioning, let's say, real estate versus auctioning off livestock?
Oh yeah, livestock is much faster. It's actually comprised of a lot of professional bidders, not only auctioneers. So you've got people that bid on a daily basis or a weekly basis and know what they're doing. They're not there to be told jokes and whatnot. They're there for business. Whereas real estate, you're talking about your average crowd, 50% plus of the people in the crowd have never even been to an auction before. So you start blowing through numbers, they're going to get lost, and you're going to lose the money that you would get from them if you went slower and slowed it down, made them feel comfortable, joked around with them. Because most people are so nervous at the auction that half the battle is getting them to relax a little bit.
I've listened to some auctions where, you know, I've been around auctions. I thought enough to not have this experience, but I couldn't understand a word.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and it wasn't a real estate auction, but like a livestock auction, you know, the only word I heard was sold.
Right.
I didn't understand a word until then.
That's why many times I have a lot of respect for them, but a cattle auctioneer is not the right auctioneer for a real estate job.
No.
Just like a real estate auctioneer might not be a good candidate for a cattle job.
Yeah, that's true. It's a specialty, and I guess you land on whatever you're best at.
Absolutely.
The difference in auctioning a property in 2005 and, say, 2010?
Oh, man. Big difference. Well, in 2005, the crowds were unbelievable. I mean, we would have, you know, hundreds of people standing on a front lawn versus now. You know, this is what's weird. This market changes by the month, is what it feels like. You know, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, it's tough to get bidders to come. This month, a lot easier to get bidders to come. Next month could be a totally different story. I think the buyers have they have this false sense that the market's coming back, and they're coming back into the marketplace to buy. The owner-occupants is who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And the auctions would just go nuts in 2005. In 2010, you got to really work them a little bit more to get them to go up. But I still think the prices that we're getting are fair market value. I mean, you have to take into account costs of a traditional sale and is it worth getting as-is, no contingent contract within 30 days? That's got to have some kind of value there, too. So if you take all that into consideration, I think the two methods can net you probably very similar prices in the auction many times faster, unless you've got a real hot area.
When you're talking to a seller, what's the main criteria that you want to hear from them before you say, okay, let's go through the drill of having an auction? Because until you've done it, you don't realize how much work is involved.
Right.
No. It's not like having a listing that doesn't sell.
No, it's we do some list and sell stuff. We've done it all. I mean, we've been in real estate so long now that we know the work involved and a lot of respect for the list and sell method because it works. In many cases, it may be the choice, but the auction method, you know, it involves 30 days of intense marketing. We're setting up marketing pieces. We're taking calls. We're fielding a lot of calls because there's a lot of people that have questions on how the auction works. You know, the most common question is, well, what's it going to sell for? And you go, I don't know. That's up to you guys as the bidder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't ever want to give them a number because everyone's number is different. You don't know who you're talking to. Are you talking to an investor? Are you talking to a homeowner? You want them all there. So
Well, what's interesting is there's a process to get them there that apparently I must have flubbed. So when you do an advertising campaign, I guess, first of all, has that changed in the last 5 years to where...
We have been able to shave back what we charge for advertising costs dramatically. Like, when I say dramatically, I'm talking 50 to 75%. Of what it used to cost to advertise for the auction is what we're finding out, and that's thanks in part mostly to the internet.
Right. It's not so much a mailing campaign as it is driving them to a website.
Right. And a lot of it too, Bruce, is the newspaper response has been very poor, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. So, and the newspaper is very expensive. So
yeah.
Shave that out completely, in my opinion, in many areas. There are certain areas that are more rural that you do need to use that newspaper because you've got people that are still reading it. But.
What type of auction would incite the most response as far as, you know, this is going to be a reserve or an absolute? Is absolute still?
Absolute is definitely going to get the most response, but I have yet to see an absolute auction done in California, at least in the past 5 years, for real estate at least. So you almost, as a bidder, need to be prepared. There is going to be some kind of reserve. You do see the subject to seller confirmation auction, which... with the banks, to be honest with you, the auctioneer probably more than likely knows a reserve there, but it's just undisclosed. They call it subject to seller confirmation. It goes back to the bank for confirmation. But I've been hired by a smaller REO auctioneer that's out of Florida, and I've been doing a lot of REO auctions lately, and I kind of know how that process works from the auctioneer in now. So.
Now, you've been doing a lot of auctions in Florida or here?
In California.
Oh, in California.
The auction company is based out of Florida, and they're contracting me to be their bid caller. And these are all REO bank-owned properties, smaller banks, more sort of out of the big city type areas that I'm doing. And it's real interesting. You know, basically about 2 days before the auction, I get emailed a reserve, and I'm obviously not supposed to disclose that to the public, which I don't.
Sure.
And then I can say sold basically on the spot if that hits that reserve.
And if it doesn't, you can get a pretty quick response?
If it doesn't, I don't know what the response would be. I think it just depends on the bank. It depends on how their process is. So I usually, what I would do is take, you know, get a contract filled out and send in their offer anyway. And it's up to the bank at that point.
When you hold this do this advertising campaign, your goal is to... And in one fell swoop, get them to the auction, or are you really wanting them to get to an open house because that's a necessary step to get them?
It's really, like you said, Bruce, it's a three-step process. We want them to call in so we can get them excited about the auction and get them excited about the property and get them to come to an open house. Then we get them more information at the open house, and the goal from the open house is to get them to come to the auction. So really we're driving them to an open house because there's only one to two chances to see that property before the auction.
Which is smart, too, right? I mean, you could have lots of open houses, but that sort of defeats the purpose.
Right. No, I think it's great for buyers to come and see, you know, 50 other people walking through a house. For two reasons. It shows that the house is popular and people want to be involved with something that's popular and something that other people like because they're going to impress their friends when they buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, it validates that we're a legitimate company because why would this many people be here if this was a scam?
What percentage of people come to the open houses end up showing at the auction?
We always do the 1-3 rule of thumb. So if you have 30 people come through an open house, we always feel that you can get 10 people to an auction.
That's
but that doesn't always come into play, but that's kind of the average.
What would you say what was your biggest surprise at an auction where you just looked at your dad and went, wow?
You know, I think, we may have told this story before, but it goes back to this little apartment building. Well, Arcadia was one where we had 75 registered bidders, of course, with it brought 40,000. But the biggest shocker, the price went to about what it should have there. The biggest shocker was a little sixplex apartment building. This is in a rent-controlled zone where they could not rebuild this property if it burned down as an apartment. They'd have to rebuild single family.
Okay.
Rent-controlled area. And this property sold, I believe, I can't remember the numbers, but Dad, you might be able to help me out. You remember the numbers on this one.
I think it was 550, wasn't it?
I think it sold for 550, and then it appraised by three different companies for 350 or something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
And this was in a rougher area of L.A. County. And the guy called me and said, well, I don't know what to do. I can't get it appraised, this and that. And I said, well, here's the deal. You've got an as-is contract. You've got $50,000 at stake here. And I said, be creative. You know, go back to some of your investor friends. This is when the market was good, too, so people were willing to lend money. He calls me back and says, well, I found a couple investors that are going to jump on with me and pay the difference in cash, and I just need another 30 days to close this. And I said, well, how about you put up another $15,000 in non-refundable money, and you can have the 30 days. And he said, here you go, and it actually closed. I can't believe it. I don't know what happened, but that was probably the most shocking thing that's ever happened, and that's what you can get with an auction.
Randy, I don't know if you remember this one or not, but I really, it sticks in my mind because we had a boot camp going on at the time, and we had this pretty crummy house on a location that was lousy on a main street in Pomona on Mission. Mm-hmm. And after the auction, I was at a restaurant, and I had my cell phone on, which is unusual, but anyway, I picked it up, and I had just talked to the group about this auction, and I said, I'm just hoping it goes, whatever the price is, it starts with a one. So I wanted 100 and something. And I remember you called me up. He said, did we end with something starting a one? And you said, no. And I went, oh man. So I'm thinking 85, 95. And it was two something. I about had a heart attack.
Yeah.
So that was my surprise. I was just, what?
That was a good one, too.
That was a good one.
That was one of our, you know, if we were to take the top 10, that'd be in the top 10.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. You can have those happen, and you can have the other end happen, too. And that's one of the things I guess you have to really explain to somebody is that you know how to get the best possible crowd there for this 30-day period. It doesn't mean that it's going to be a lead pipe since to get the answer that you want.
Exactly.
Right. I think if you can expect an outcome of anywhere from 80 to 110%, I know that's a big range, but that's usually where we're in, and we're usually closer to the 90 to 95% range. If you can be in there as a seller, starting at a reasonable number, of course, then it's, it'll work every time for you.
Yeah, you know, for me, the time that it's worked is when I really had a margin that was acceptable, something I've owned for a long time, and I wanted just to exit it as quickly as possible with the least hassle, because I've been in escrow tons of times when you go through a 60-day dance and then another 60-day dance, and it's just sometimes you're just mentally ready to just say whatever it is fine, you know, and that's your best type of seller, no doubt about it.
Right.
Okay, now we'll just transfer a little bit to charity auctions. So when did you start getting involved in that? And tell me what it is that you're auctioning off inside of a charity auction.
I started doing charity auctions about 3 years ago. It was basically for Make-A-Wish was my first charity auction, and I did it, of course, for free. It's with my We do a big Make-A-Wish function here in Bakersfield every year, and this is the third successful year, and we've raised more money each year.
Well, by the way, invite us to that. I'd love to go.
All right. You're invited next year. We'll get you something.
Okay.
But it's a great event, and that's where I first did my first charity auction, and I said, you know what? This is fun. This is a lot more fun than real estate.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, you're selling donated items by companies, anything ranging from trips. I've sold dogs, puppies, you know, all that stuff, tons of things that have been donated. Anything you can imagine that a company would donate, and there's a lot of different ways to sell it, not only using a live auction. I've sold, raised money using somewhat of an auction method without selling anything at charity auctions.
Okay.
And there's a lot of things that people don't know about that a professional auctioneer will that does charity auctions. And once again, goes back to someone that specializes in charity auctions is going to be a better for your event than someone that does real estate. I happen to do both, but I got into it about 3 years ago, and it's grown crazy. I have like 10 auctions in the next month and a half, and they're all charity related.
Really, that was one of my questions. How often do you hold them? And I would have thought it would have been one a month.
I'm doing this time of year. This is a real hot charity. It dies a lot in summer because people are on vacation. Spring and fall are the big charity time. So spring, I'm doing anywhere from one to two a week. And I do a lot in San Diego County because I'm linked with another charity auctioneer that is based out of Louisville, Kentucky, and he refers me a lot of business. So
interesting.
And then I do a lot of stuff here in Kern County. It's grown every year by basically triple, quadruple the amount of auctions I did the year before. So that business is really growing.
Now, since you said it's a business that's got to make money, so how is it that you get paid in the charity auction?
I can set it up in many different ways. I can work for a flat fee. I can work for a percentage of different events. Like I'll do a live auction. Sometimes what I do is, as an icebreaker, is what I call centerpiece auction. And basically what that is you get one person at every table to stand up and sell that centerpiece to their table.
Mm-hmm.
And the highest bidder wins a prize, a bottle of wine or an iPod or something like that. But it's another way to break the ice. Everyone gets involved in the room, and then you do the live auction. And then we do what's called an appeal. And that's basically asking for cash at different levels to fund a need of that charity. So you might have six levels and start at, let's say, 10,000, go to five, then 2,500. And basically you're just asking to hold up your paddle at that level, and you collect money. And I'll tell you, it raises equal to or more than a live auction every time.
That's fascinating. I'm looking forward to attending one. I'll check on your website and make sure anything that's local, I'll come see. How large are these auctions?
Most of the ones that I do have anywhere from 300 to 500 attendees.
Oh, I had no idea.
They're pretty big events. Obviously, I've done the smaller events too, a Playhouse auction for Habitat for Humanity that had maybe 100 people. But most of them are big ballroom-type settings, and they have a dinner, they have a band, the whole presentation. I mean, these things can get very, very detailed. I did one at the Kodak Theater with a bunch of celebrities for Life Rolls On Foundation, and I mean, this thing was a production. There was a rehearsal I had to go through, and there's, you know, that was probably the most one with the most production value that I've done. But
now it sounds like most of these are annual events. Would that be accurate?
Yes, they're annual. Usually they're once a year. Many charities do two or three different events that they cycle every year at different times of the year to hit the market at different times, and so, you know, it's just, you know, if you like me, you call me the next year. And most people, I get the call back so far, which is good. So that means I'm doing something right,
I think. Now, what is your auction website for those auctions?
For charity stuff, it's simple. It's just Mike Grigg Auctions. Grigg is the last name.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. I'm looking forward to going to one of those. We got a couple minutes left. I want to go over to a subject, and it probably crosses over to one of the big problems that I think the auction business has, and you've just been the past president. So I wondered if you, and again, 90 seconds is about what we have, addressing the companies that will shill bid, and a lot of them are going to online formats now, and I'm just wondering how hard the trust factor is there to where if you've attended live and you know that's going on, and now how do you feel comfortable with an online bid being legit? Did that ever come up in your tenure as president?
Absolutely. It's a very, in the auction business, I'll try to be quick with it. It's a very not talked about thing, but everyone knows it goes on. But no auctioneer wants to ever admit doing it. It's very frowned upon, to be honest with you. It's not illegal if it's disclosed properly.
Correct.
And yes, Bruce, it is definitely a concern with the online auctions. It's real easy to do. You just have someone with a username. You wouldn't know as a bidder what was going on. In my opinion, if you've got a number in your head as an investor and they're going to run the bid on you and the bank needs to get a certain reserve, then, and it's disclosed properly and you know it's going to go on, but you still get it for your number or less, then there shouldn't be a problem there. You can still make money.
I would agree with that.
It feels uncomfortable. The topic is definitely uncomfortable to talk about because it's like, But I think if it's disclosed properly and you know what's going on, you still can get some deals here and there, then so be it.
I think one thing that it does is unfairly skew the volume that goes to the companies that might do it, because obviously they might have a bump up in price that someone legitimate wouldn't. But
it does. It does. You can look at it as, hey, stuff should be selling for cheaper, but you can also look at it as, hey, it's somewhat protecting the marketplace. So when you do go to resell, the market's not totally in the dump. You know?
All right, guys, we got to go. Mike and Randy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Bruce.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.